basically in almost every person that I worked for in my early career, those personality traits, like, you know, cussing or putting my fist on the desk or whatever, they didn't suit me. And so, like, I was very fortunate when I became CEO is that you have the opportunity to sort of, like, redefine what it means to be a leader, and you don't have to act masculine.
Run toward the unknown. When you're riding the big wheel, you're not alone.
Today, I'm talking with Christy Johnson, General Partner and Chief Performance Officer of BIP Ventures, the North American Venture Capital Division of BIP Capital, one of the Southeast's largest and most active venture capital firms focused on early stage growth companies. In this two-part series, we're going to be talking to Christy about what continues to be top of mind for company leaders, which is how companies can adapt and continue to grow in an uncertain and difficult economic environment. We then explore the future of work and what the workplace of tomorrow will look like, and how you can leverage AI in the workplace and in your personal life. Finally, we'll just talk about what it's like leading as a woman, things that she's learned, and things that are ahead for her on the horizon. It was a very fun, extremely informative, and very fast podcast for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And as always, may this conversation inspire you in your own personal and professional journey of life.
Well, we would be remiss to talk about the future of the workplace without talking about AI.
Yep.
And its impact in the workplace. So I wanted to just ask you a little bit about how you are leveraging AI in the workplace. And then, you know, even personally, but just kind of how you see it playing in the workplace. But I thought it would be really interesting just starting with, do you guys use it, you know, at your company, and how? And then what kind of place do we think it could play in the everyday?
Yeah, well, I certainly use it. And I use it primarily for productivity. So, you know, in the same ways that everybody probably defaults to using it, which is content or research. And so, you know, there's probably nothing that I do, even like someone recently asked me for a recommendation letter. I'm going to get my start, you know, and I put like, you know, curate a letter, you know, that these are the biggest attributes, these are the job responsibilities, and then it gives me something that's 90% there, and then I can use the 10% to sort of tweak.
Incredible.
Super helpful. You know, as we have lots of companies that are hiring for positions. And so it's super good at like putting in, give me a job description, and you can make it super specific for a SaaS company and 5 million in revenues looking for, you know, a leader in sales and with these types of backgrounds, and that, you know, gives you something, spits out something that would have taken you a while to put together, and you can spend your energy on making that better. And so I think that, you know, certainly our terrain analysis and the things that the investment teams are doing, they're using, you know, all of the normal tools that they do and then augmenting that with AI and, you know, juxtaposing what they can come up with, very similar to what you were explaining, you know, is like in terms of the accuracy. But it definitely comes up with things that they had not necessarily thought of, and it definitely makes the process, it just makes them more efficient. So, you know, looking for ways that you can do that. Where I think that I think it's going to be completely disruptive, and I think it's going to happen extremely fast. So if you look at, this is somewhat equivalent, and maybe very, arguably very equivalent to the internet. And so that was like a revolutionary thing that happened, but it happened at a much slower pace. And if you think about, okay, why was that? You know, you had that was controlled by a very small number of people, and then it evolved as other people, like that started widening and other people started figuring out how they could use it. And so when you have open source and you have lots of people and all the great minds in the world who are building on each other's great thoughts and great processes, that creates an exponential environment, which is what we're in now. So, you know, we have like sort of now, I think it was November of last year that ChatGPT came out. And so if you are under any illusion that you're on top of things, you are kidding yourself because it is moving so quickly. And I think that we're just going to continue to see that. But I think what's going to happen is that you're going to, the things that it's going to disrupt are the things that like that have like an action, and then there's a corollary. So things that if this, then that. So you look at things like accounting. Certainly any type, everybody knows for content, you know, so like the content development is just like, it's amazing what happens. I mean, like even the virtual and the visual and illustration and things like that, like when you look at what it can do with just a few prompts and the fact that it's mind blowing that I can use a prompt and I'll get an image and a set of images. And 5 minutes later, you can put the exact same prompt in and you will get an image that looks wildly different because of the fact that it learned so much in that 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, to think that this is a unique thing that just existed. So, like, where all this goes, who knows? But, you know, like, accounting is very predictable. And so it's, like, programmable. And so you'll have, you already know it's going to disrupt programming and engineering. You know it's already going to, like, there's going to be financial things that can be completely automated in a way. And then outliers, like, highlighted very easily in ways that, you know, it took somebody to like, oh, I'm studying this P&L. You don't have to because it's going to prompt you for all the things and all, you know, it's going to give you a list of suggestions on the ways that, like the efficiency question that we were having, you know, it's going to say, this is the places that you need to look for efficiencies. And so things that, you know, like a, and you'll never take the human element out of it. It's just going to make those people that much more efficient. And I think I mentioned before that the difference is going to be that the people who utilize it become 100 times more efficient than the people who don't know how to utilize it. So the, you know, the gap there, the knowledge gap and the productivity gap is going to get wider and wider. So if you don't like get on the train, the fact that you're going to be so out of date is going to become much more, you know, like of an immediate and a stark thing that didn't exist before. You know, I think that there's, certainly, I can't imagine in the, because people are already trying to figure out top of funnel. And so I can't think that there's not going to be software that comes out that allows you to, this all the stuff that we were talking about before on ICP and targeting, and it'll do a terrain analysis automatically for you. And you might just have to put in the SEC or the IC, what is it, the code.
The SIC code.
Yeah. So, you know, like it'll just spit these things out and it's going to go and do things that we as humans have like pulled together. And this might take us weeks, months, whatever. So, and then it'll create and it'll go pull list and it'll, you know, scrape LinkedIn. And, you know, we already have tools that are very scary. Like how you can pull my name and not only do you know my personal email or my work email address, but you also know my personal email address and my home address. Like that is very scary. I don't know how
you can bring up a picture of your home if someone wanted, right? All this other stuff. You're like, what? Yeah, because so, my daughter was showing me. She was looking.
This is how
me.
Much our home is worth, and this is what it looks like. Yeah, this is how you drive to it. But yes, and then like people can, you know, reverse engineer and get your cell phone number and all kinds of things. But I think that they'll, you know, the constricting factor in that for us now as human beings with the limitations that we have with our own mind is that we can only do so much so quickly. If you have something that, and by the way, that's exponentially going to move, like how much it can consume and how much it can, you know, sort of churn out immediately, seemingly instantaneously. And so like that, you know, clearly is going to, as an entire, you know, world, create a lot more efficiencies in the things that people are doing. So yes, jobs will change. Some will be archaic and go away, and some will be new. And you know, I would, if I was coming out of school right now, would get really, really well versed at like prompt building. But you know, who knows that we can probably, they already have ways that it's automating its own prompts. So, you know, those might just be, that's necessary for a very short period of time until technology like figures out a solution for that. So I do think that the it's not without merit to say like, oh, how can they use this for, you know, evil as opposed for good? Because, you know, when we think about it, we're only thinking about the ways in which it can enhance and make mankind better. I do think, you know, you can certainly watch lots of documentaries that will scare you. But I think if you also just look at like the internet and the who were the first people to sort of take advantage of, like, trying to sell things on there? I mean, there was a lot of nefarious things. You had gambling, you had pornography, mm-hmm. you had, like, they were early adopters because they were just looking for different channels. And so I think, you know, we're going to have to figure out ways to regulate. We're going to have to figure out ways to make sure it's a fair playing field, all of those things. But, you know, the good news is those conversations are starting, and I'd like to think, as you know, as the human race, we can figure out ways to make sure that, you know, we can safeguard the things that are the most concerning of things moving at warp speed that we don't understand. Because
I know
that's for sure.
It is moving at warp speed. You know, I was having a conversation with someone about this. It's a little bit different than the AI, but the advancement of technology. My dad is 89, and he's pretty incredible. We were talking about him a little earlier. He lives in his own home. He's a retired firefighter for years, like 40, and they asked him to come back, and he went to go work for the fire chief who he mentored, right? That was the next guy coming in. So he went, you know, begrudgingly, 6 months after retirement, he's like, fine. He's been there another 20 years.
You know,
so, yeah, over 20 years, actually. I think he said it was 28 years. He has one of the oldest employment numbers in the city of Albany, New York. Yeah, of anyone else. He's got, like, a really low number. Anyway, he was talking to me. He called me. Then he called me, and he was all excited that he figured something out. But he said, okay, I got this thing about my health care, and now they're saying something about an app on my phone, and I'm not going to get a card, and this digital thing, like, I don't know. And he knows everybody. I'm going to City Hall. I'm just going to go talk to the mayor, right? I'm the mayor. Yeah, the mayor will fix it. So he goes, and he did talk to City Hall, and he did get it resolved, but he calls me up. Okay, so here's how they explain it to me. Jack, don't worry about it. This is not for people like you. Well, I'm like, people like you. First of all, I would have been like, what did they mean by people like me? But they basically said, I will get you a card, and I will print you a card, and I'll make sure that you have everything you need. So I bring up that story because across different demographics, right? So he's not out looking for a job, but you've got Gen Xers who are trying to figure out how to keep up. And then you've got Gen Z that was almost born with it, right? Yep. That are coming up. And the difference is so vast in how we interact with this technology and how we leverage it in our lives and in our work. We had talked about how younger people are even more careless about it, whereas someone more mature might be more careful with how they engage and what they even let out there. How do we think about that? You know, I'm going to bring it back to you running a business, right? I'm going to bring it back to you advising your companies, portfolio companies. How do we bridge the gap and really, you know, help everyone get to where we want them to get? Some people aren't left behind. Others don't say about, you know, the Gen X are, oh, it's just time for them to retire, right? The Gen X are even, right? We're old and we need to be out. How do we really bring those people together?
Yeah, I don't know that there's probably a solution where we don't have some people who eventually age out because of the fact that, I mean, my parents are exactly the same. My dad struggles with, I can't even get him off the flip phone. And it's got a little tiny things and he has to press, you know, the button three times to move to the letter. So needless to say, there's no texting going on. So, but there is if you think about sort of we're of the age, we didn't grow up with it,
right?
But we adopted it.
Yep.
And so you figure that there's probably another 20, 30 years before you will have no one alive on, you know, that did not have some part of their either professional career or their growing up that involved a cell phone. And, you know, that's weird to think, but, you know, and I do think that it's kind of interesting because one of the things that you mentioned, I was thinking, I wonder if it's different because, of course, when we were young and you would start a job and there was like the more senior people and they, you know, you learn to appreciate that they had a lot of value. And even though you probably thought the same, like, why did they? Because a lot of times they would also say, we do it because we've always done it that way. And I always used to think, that is the most ridiculous response I've ever thought of. But over time, you know, you certainly learn from them. You start to appreciate them in a way that because you're with them and you can see that. So I wonder if sort of the gap between, you know, sort of the difference in generations and the credibility that the more seasoned work employees have been given in decades past doesn't translate now because they're not in the office together.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so I wonder, and they're also probably the people who are struggling the most with the technology that they have. I will admittedly say that, I probably had a reputation for, like, if it can go wrong with technology, it's going to happen to me. I don't know if there's any user problem there. I'm sure that the people that support me were, like, rolling their eyes and saying, it's Christy. But I do think that, you know, that there's a certain amount of command that the younger generation probably has that that I don't possess. But I will say that, you know, I like to think that I'm very much an early adopter to anything that will help me do what I try to do better. And so I think that, you know, I wonder, as you were posing that question, if, like, because we're in a remote environment, if, like, the difficulties that we may have in terms of, like, being quick on the uptake on some of the technology that's being used, as well as that you don't get to sort of shine in terms of the experience set that you've had, whether that causes a greater gap in sort of the, and I'm going to, I don't know how else to say it, but sort of the reverence that we had for those that came before us. It's probably different now.
Something for leaders to keep in mind anyway.
Yes, for sure.
So you agreed to be on Riding the Big Wheel. And so as a result, I asked you if you would think about sharing with us a big wheel moment for you. And, you know, I like to think about a big wheel moment as just an aha, an epiphany. It might not have been life-changing. It might have been. So is there a big wheel moment that you could share with us today?
Sure. And, I mean, probably there's a lot. But I think if I – where I, like, had an aha moment that – felt rewarding, but also felt like this is a massive learning for me that I did not necessarily understand and wouldn't have if I hadn't gone through the experience. And I don't know if anybody else has used this, but COVID for me, as a leader, when we moved, we had, and I'm sure other people have similar stories, but this was just very acute for us. So within the first, right before we had to leave the office, our largest customer told us that they were not going to be renewing because they had gotten hit with budget cuts, that they had to get $3 million into the budget. And it was all sort of related to COVID because it was a utility company. And so their world had changed because they were in a situation where they were told that they couldn't cut off residential power. Well, that was their only leverage for getting paid for people who weren't paying them. And then the commercial power consumption went away overnight. So they were sitting at a very different economic situation. So we lost that one. And then we had another that was a clothing manufacturer, but almost all of their clothing was being manufactured in China. Well, we were supposed to get on a kickoff call for the next year. We have strategic planning software. It was a strategy kickoff. And we came to that call and they told us that basically the entire company was essentially being shut down, but that their whole strategy department had been shuttered. And so we lost our first and second customers within 27 days of each other. So I wasn't entirely sure we were going to make it through. And we had a lot of headwinds. We also had a lot of businesses that were hospitals. And so I naively thought, wow, we are at least a lot of our revenues with hospitals. If anybody's going to be making money, it's going to be hospitals. Well, that was not the truth because I had didn't really recognize that, you know, their business model, they make most of their money off of elective surgery. Mm. Well, guess what wasn't happening? You weren't having plastic surgery or things that were not had to take place and outpatient stuff and all that sort of came to a halt. It was also, they had all these, we were working with strategy departments. And so most hospitals have 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year plans. And so they put a lot on strategic planning. Mm. And so all of those people were being reappointed, like, okay, so go find gloves and go find nurses and go find. So it was all hands on deck for almost every single hospital. So, you know, like here was our main, you know, concentration of customers that were being impacted in such an extreme way. So we were having a churn problem. And, you know, like I, like literally in March, April, May of 2020, I was not sure that we were going to be able to get through. So for me as a leader, I had like most of, you know, I was always sort of the cheerleader, which you have to be, but it was always about sort of the business and like, let's like focus on our customers. And like, it was always my engagement with everybody was less about sort of what was personally happening to them. So then it became, okay, your number one goal has nothing to do with, well, it, quasi, but not really. It doesn't have to do with growth. You know, you're just, you have a responsibility to everybody on this team. But not only did I have a responsibility, everybody did. So I like completely shifted to saying, okay, like on this Zoom call, look to the square to your left and your right. And we have an obligation to each other to get everybody on this call to the other side. Mm. And so that means we have to like go to the mat for every customer. We have to like bind together. We have to not only keep focus on our customers, but on each other. And so if you have a colleague that doesn't sound right, if you have a colleague that needs something really flexible because they have children at home that are on Zoom and they're in elementary school, so they have to have different working hours. If somebody doesn't sound right, ask them how they're doing. And we started doing, like, I think we called it Wellness Wednesday. And so I'd send out like water bottles and we would all get together and talk about the importance of hydration or like essential oil and like breathing techniques. And we would all practice it. And then we would have other people. So everybody knew that, you know, and then openly talking about it, like this is unprecedented. We don't know what to expect, but as a business, we can only control what we can control. So we got to give it everything that we've got, but it's not because we have some, you know, objective of growth that we're trying to hit this year. It's because we want to make sure that everybody that came into this year with us, we get to the other side. And so we owe it to each other. And that takes on two forms. That takes on the health of the business so that we don't have to, you know, have a riff or let people go. So that's like one dimension of it. The other is checking in with each other and supporting them in a way that is meaningful, because we are each other's extension of a family, because a lot of people don't have their family with them in the ways that they've been able to engage with them before. So we have to take on that role. So for me, it was a very deliberate but different mindset that I had never like had to been forced to before. And I am very proud to say we all made it to the other side and we actually came out way stronger on the other end. But it was funny because I hadn't, like, you always hear like, you know, it's all about the employees. And it, and I thought before that, that I had that mindset. But I had the mindset that that actually meant getting the right person in the right job, supporting them at their professional development, making sure they felt fulfilled, which are very important components of it. But there was a human piece of that that was missing. Mm. And I felt like it really like bound us together in a way that was really, really strong. And so when we started having the lots of people, like that was the great, whatever, the great resignation, you started having, and when we came out of it, people started having these massive salaries and everything thrown in front of them. We lost like only a few. And it was only because there was no way that we would not say, you know, you have to take this up for, you know, your family and, you know, your own professional development. But most people stayed and, you know, it was such a strong culture and it's remained that way. But I'm not sure if we hadn't gone through COVID together, if it would have been that way, or if we would have not focused so much on like the, and I'm going to say mental health, but just the overall health of each other, as well as the health of the business. And so that was kind of an aha moment for me. Not only was I, did I feel like that was like we were able to do that and that was an accomplishment, but I also feel like it taught me, you know, things that I didn't have like complete recognition of that I think made me better. And so I think that that would be my big wheel moment.
That's a great thing for people to hear and to listen to. And what would you say, I think I know the answer, but what would you say how that has impacted you as a leader today?
Oh, it definitely, I think it made me more vulnerable and certainly much more transparent with people. And then that was the other thing, too, is I think that, and you probably have these same things, is that if you're a female, especially in a male-dominated environment, showing emotion or, the things that make you tick as a female or as a person, those aren't necessarily always rewarded, and they're sort of seen as weaknesses. So the other thing that that did is just sort of, break down people in a way that didn't really matter. And so there's plenty of people who I was virtually having conversations with that were crying and doing things that made them much more human. And so I think that, and some of it's age too, it's just it doesn't matter. Trying to emulate being masculine and the things that make, that you see, basically in almost every person that I worked for in my early career, those personality traits, cussing or putting my fist on the desk or whatever, they didn't suit me. And so, I was very fortunate when I became CEO, is that you have the opportunity to sort of, redefine what it means to be a leader, and you don't have to act masculine. And so that was a very culminating experience, because the vulnerability that I had made that okay for the rest of the organization. And then that actually was much more indicative of sort of the way I naturally behaved, but also I think that it set a tone for the organization that if it had been a male at the helm, I'm not sure 100% that it wouldn't have resulted in the same outcome. It may have. The path there would have probably not as been as galvanizing, because I think that if you're vulnerable at the top, then it creates a safe space for everybody to do that. And I was talking about things that before COVID we would have never talked about. We're not check in with your neighbor and do those things, or having people, we always talked about things for what we were thankful for Thanksgiving. And so those are, I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for my health, so the level of vulnerability than we went through that year, because everyone had it was just so different and we didn't know how to navigate it. And so I am thankful. I do think that it's made me much more totally comfortable that's how other people do it. I have my own way, and it's much more vulnerable, and it's much more probably feminine. And I think that it serves us well. And I think that because of that female trait, I think females are uniquely set and wired to be really good leaders.
Well, Kristy, thank you so much for being here today, for your insight and sharing your time. I sincerely appreciated it. And you are welcome back anytime.
Well, thank you, Michelle. I always enjoy conversations with you, and really appreciate you having me on the podcast, and happy to come back at any time or have a glass of wine or coffee anywhere else.
You got it.
Thanks.
Hey, it's Michelle. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy our podcast and know someone who you believe would make a great guest, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's talk. I'd love to hear your feedback. And as always, may it inspire you in your own personal and professional journey of life.